In der heutigen Folge habe ich Prima Gaia zu Gast, eine liebe Kollegin von mir, die in schwierigen Verhältnissen aufgewachsen ist, nur um dann nach Hollywood zu gehen und da als Model Karriere zu machen, sehr erfolgreich zu sein, Luxus-Lifestyle gelebt hat und dann nach einer inneren Eingebung alle Dinge, die sie jemals besessen hat, verbrannt oder verschenkt hat, um auf eine Pilgerreise zu gehen. Super spannende Geschichte.
So I gave away all of my possessions till I only had the clothes on my back. I gave away what little money I had left and I started walking. And so I ended up walking over 500 kilometers from San Marcos, Texas, all the way to Reynosa, Mexico. So I crossed over to Mexico, and on my walking pilgrimage, I was visiting different spiritual teachers and shamans and mystics and intentional communities, ashrams.
Ich bin Dana Strand und da ist Gold drin. Als ich Prima kennengelernt habe, das ist noch gar nicht so lange her, vor ein paar Monaten, haben wir ein längeres Gespräch geführt und mich hat ihre Geschichte sofort total beeindruckt und ich habe direkt gedacht, oh Gott, ich will unbedingt diese Geschichte mit euch teilen und sie interviewen und ich freue mich riesig, dass ich das heute machen kann. Das Interview ist auf Englisch, wenn du Untertitel dazu möchtest, dann kannst du dir das Ganze auch auf YouTube anschauen, angucken, anhören, da findest du dann die deutschen Untertitel dazu. Ansonsten wünsche ich dir ganz viel Freude mit dieser verrückten, tollen, beeindruckenden Frau, die eine sehr tiefgehende spirituelle Transformation durchlaufen hat in ihrem Leben und Heilung gefunden hat nach einer wirklich schwierigen Kindheit durch abgefahrene Erfahrung. Ich wünsche dir ganz viel Spaß.
Prima, I'm so happy to have you here. Welcome, welcome from Costa Rica to Germany. So good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Dana. I'm so happy and honored to be here with you as well today also.
Great. I would love to dive right into your just so amazing story. I talked about it a little bit in the introduction that you have had this huge experience and these huge shifts in your life. And I'd like to start right in the beginning, like in a nutshell, childhood story. What would you say? What was that little Prima girl growing up? Who was she? What was the setting? What happened to her? Little Prima.
So my journey began, and the reason that I ended up walking the path that I have chosen to walk began in my early childhood, being a very, very sensitive soul. And in my early formative years, I incurred trauma, significant trauma that I didn't have the tools or the practices or the self-awareness to integrate at the time. And so what I ended up doing was internalizing a lot of that as there's something wrong with me. There's something about me that it just really is not okay. And as I entered into my teenage years with this low self-worth that I took on from the messages and the trauma that I experienced, what ended up happening was I was introduced to alcohol and recreational drugs when I was 15. And because I didn't have the self-awareness or the tools to do the healing of the trauma that I was carrying in my body, in my nervous system, in my emotional body, I ended up having a decade from 15 to 25, a decade of numbing with alcohol and recreational drugs. Mm. And so I found a way to basically with alcohol and recreational drugs, it somehow let me kind of express more of myself and just override some of the low self-worth and just get out there and kind of in some way find a certain level of connection with people. And so I was able to connect on a very surface level, but that was better than what I had had before that. Sure. In some way. And also feeling back into what was going on for me, just feeling so deeply lonely, mm-hmm. like just, you know, from, from family members that were just very under-resourced and doing the best that they could and just feeling so, so lonely, so deeply, deeply, deeply lonely. So that, and for those who've studied attachment wounding, that catalyzes anxious attachment style, just so longing for connection and so longing for intimacy and so longing, just so longing to deeply connect and to be seen accurately and to be valued. And what ended up happening was, it was about, it was actually my early 20s when I actually met an adult that was the first safe, emotionally safe adult that I could really lean into and relax and
what was different? Yeah, what was different? Was it about you or was it about that person?
It was a family member who was living in another country, and we just had a special soul contract. She was a very, very magical woman, a priestess, and just so loving and compassionate to me. It was just, you know, just a special soul contract, I believe. But what was going on? So in those years of numbing, 15 to 25, you can imagine, and maybe some of the listeners had a phase of numbing as well. So I was binge drinking and using alcohol and recreational drugs, things like cocaine and ecstasy on the weekends, but I was still very highly functioning. So I still was like, you know, a bright light, like very, you know, I was very friendly and loving, but inside I was like dying inside. I was in so much pain, and I would be around a big group of people. Like, for example, when I first started university, I would be around a big group of people and go home feeling more lonely than I felt before I left the house, which was so sad because I didn't know how to bring more parts of myself online and into the interaction, into the conversation. I was hiding so many parts of myself. I was hiding all the hurt parts, all the vulnerable parts. So I wasn't able to have deeply intimate relationships back then. And I know that you talk a lot about authenticity, and that is a point that you and I meet on very much, because that's something that we're both very passionate about, very devoted to. And so obviously when you're binge drinking and utilizing recreational drugs and not being present, not being in your body, you can't really have, as far as I know, it's from my experience, it's fairly impossible to have deeply authentic relationships. Mm-hmm. Because you're numbing or hiding large parts of yourself. And
it's
not
basically the point of numbing in the first place, in a way, unconsciously, you know, mm-hmm. but probably is.
Yeah. It's an interesting point that you bring up. It's like, I feel like we numb until we discover resources and tools that enable us to stop numbing. And it's like, by God's grace, one day, you know, someone crosses your path and they have some resources or some tools or practices, or you go to a yoga class and you meet a special teacher, or you go to a guided meditation, and you meet someone who has some information for you. And it's like, that was my experience. So when I had my first spiritual awakening, many years ago, it was 20 years ago now, when I had my first spiritual awakening, I stopped using alcohol and drugs cold turkey. Like in one day, I was like, I'm never going to use those again because they were totally not serving me. And then I had discovered, meditation, and I was like, okay, this feels way more resonant. Let me put my energy towards this. And so in one day, without any, you know, recovery support group, I was just like, okay, I'm done.
What made you do this? How did you come to that decision? Because you had this wild life.
Yeah, well, I want to share also a little bit about what ended up happening with this sweet, sweet, tender girl with a big heart, with a lot of pain, who had, you know, a lot of light and wanted to be a light in the world, but had very low self-esteem and didn't know how to really live in this world. So in my late teens, people started saying to me, you should try modeling, or you should be in the entertainment industry. And I was like, wow, that sounds really inspiring and exciting. So I moved to Los Angeles and I did start working as a model and doing TV commercials and music videos. And interestingly enough, even though I had had very low self-esteem before I moved to Hollywood, the Hollywood Hills, which is where I lived in my early 20s, when I got there, all these doors opened up to me. And it was so extraordinary because here I was, someone who was just desperate for external validation, so seeking, you know, some form of validation to prove that I have worth. And then I got to Los Angeles and suddenly I was invited to all of these A-list celebrity clubs and Hollywood Hills house parties, movie premieres, getting backstage passes to all these big, you know, events with celebrities. And that became my life for about 2 years. And I was so fascinated by that culture. And I was so curious, is this what I've been looking for? Are these people truly happy? Is there deep fulfillment to be found for me here? So I kept on meeting people, going to events, hobnobbing with, you know, people who were very influential in that scene at the time. And eventually I discovered that what I was seeking wasn't going to be found there, which was very disappointing because I had put a lot of energy into it. And I had built out my modeling portfolio with all of these photos, and I was just clinging on to that as a sense of my self-worth. But when I had my spiritual awakening, my guidance was very strong to actually take my entire modeling portfolio and put it in the recycle bin, just drop it in the recycle bin. Because what I realized was I had been anchoring myself to this illusion, and that was actually perpetuating a lot of pain for me.
Can you talk a little bit more about that spiritual awakening? We've talked about it before, so I know a little bit about it. You talk a lot about your inner guidance. Mm-hmm. And what I would love to know is, I don't know if it's possible to answer that question, but I pose it anyway. How exactly does it show up? Did it show up in those days? Like, is it like an inner voice, or did you receive signs from the outside, or was it emotional or thought? Like, what, like how did that inner guidance for you show up? Because you were so clear, you know, mm-hmm. that portfolio, to put it in the bin, is like, that's like throwing away your identity you have carefully built to not be hurt anymore. So there must have been this like gigantic force that has built the strength to do that. So how did that inner guidance show up for you?
That's a beautiful question. Thank you. So there was two different spiritual awakenings. The first one was in 2001, and that was when I was guided that my entire life needed to change. And that was just by discovering about meditation, learning about meditation. Mm-hmm. And then I began going to Vipassana 10-day retreats, and then I started doing a lot of yoga and became a raw vegan and just changed into a very holistic lifestyle starting in 2001. But then what I had done after that was something that a lot of spiritual seekers do when they first get onto a spiritual path, was I started to believe that the one meditation path that I was on was the highest path. And if I just followed every single teaching to the letter, like everything verbatim, like, you know, read the meditation books over and over again and just ask the teacher to tell me exactly what to do with my life, then I would receive the liberation that I was so deeply seeking. And then I would be, you know, in alignment with my purpose and why I chose to come to this planet. And so eventually, you know, as you can imagine, I learned and discovered over time that there's not one path that we can invest all of our energy towards, and then that will give us all of the answers. We are all here on this planet with a unique puzzle piece in the cosmic puzzle, so to speak. And there's not one path that's going to serve everyone. And also, we can't get all of our answers from one lineage. That's my experience. And so I ended up feeling really called to study all of the world's wisdom traditions and healing modalities, many, many different healing modalities. And so because I just realized that there was not going to be one path that was going to be the answer and the end all and be all for me. And so my biggest spiritual awakening was in 2006, when I came to this realization that there is no one path, that that I am a soul who's on an evolutionary path, that I'm here, you know, as someone who is going to be walking a pioneering path and doing things a little bit differently, and that I wasn't going to be able to find all the answers in the lineage that I was in at that time, which was a meditation lineage. And so I started receiving really strong guidance inside my consciousness, like clairaudient, like hearing guidance of, you know, your entire life needs to change. You're meant to begin and start building a new chapter of your life from the ground up. And everything that you're anchoring yourself to is an illusion. You've been living for other people. You've been living for what you thought your parents wanted, or what society said, or what the media told you that you needed to be. And all of that needs to go. And so I also had discovered a book by a wonderful woman named Peace Pilgrim. This was in 2006, who walked probably about 30,000 miles, sharing the message that in order for us to have world peace, we need to have inner peace first, find inner peace deep inside ourselves, each in our own unique way. And I got really inspired. And so I decided to go on a long walking pilgrimage myself. So I gave away every single one of my possessions till I only had the clothes on my back. I laid out all of my things at, I set up these free markets in the downtown area where I was living, and I put all my things out there, my rollerblades, my stereo, my shoes, everything that I had accumulated in 30 years of life were all laid out on these blankets, and just telling people, take anything you want. I don't need it anymore. And so people would take
that. Was that easy or hard, or did you feel things like rip from your heart because you were still attached, or were you free already? I'm really attached. Yeah. So I cannot imagine what it would feel like. Mm-hmm. To let go and let go and let go and let go.
Well, the emotional pain that I was still carrying was such a powerful catalyst for me to do this. And so the process of giving away all of my possessions took 2 weeks. And I felt like I was in limbo between my old life and the new life that I was being called into. And so I really just couldn't wait to start walking. And so I was really excited to actually give everything away. And so I gave away all of my possessions till I only had the clothes on my back. I gave away what little money I had left, and I started walking. And so I ended up walking over 500 kilometers from San Marcos, Texas, all the way to Reynosa, Mexico. So I crossed over to Mexico, and on my walking pilgrimage, I was visiting different spiritual teachers and shamans and mystics and intentional communities, ashrams. And basically what I was doing was asking people, who are the most inspiring and awakened beings you've ever met? What are the most inspiring evolutionary communities you've ever heard of? And I was going and visiting these different places. And what I was doing during that time was I was sleeping outside on back doorsteps of churches, on bales of hay, on picnic tables, in all different kinds of areas, on tree branches. I was sleeping outside the entire way, and I felt very, very guided and very protected. And it was a very inspiring journey. I was actually really, really inspired during the journey, although it was challenging and my legs got really, really, really sore at first. But it was I felt so inspired that I was following my guidance, and that there was a new chapter of life being revealed to me one step at a time.
How long did it take you to walk this path?
It took me about a month. Yeah. And the most that I ever walked in one day was about 30 miles. Not sure how many kilometers that is, like over 40 something kilometers. It was crazy, wild, like, but I did it.
I wouldn't even do that with a bicycle.
Yeah, it was, my training during that time was just really being in the present moment, asking spirit to guide me every day, following my guidance. And sometimes people would pass me on the highway at like 6 p.m. and I would have people stop, and they'd be like, I was driving somewhere like at 8 a.m. and I saw you, and you're still walking, and it's like 25 miles later. Like, what's going on for you? Do you need anything? Or did you want to come over for dinner. So I had people invite me into their homes, but it was so incredibly touching, because in that journey, I had removed all of these layers of who I thought I was. And for the first time in my life, I was free to be who I actually was. The first time in my entire life, I was free to express and move through my world in the ways that were the most authentic for myself at the age of 30. So it felt like this massive liberation, this massive breakthrough. And I had two goals in my vision quest. After my walking pilgrimage, I ended up hitchhiking over 20,000 miles across Mexico, the United States, and Canada, visiting spiritual teachers, sages, again, different, doing things like going on a Lakota vision quests, going to different monasteries, going to many different intentional communities. And my goals during that whole pilgrimage were, number one, I knew from what I had read in all of my studies that there have been saints and sages alive on this planet in every culture since the beginning of time. And I wanted to meet them and learn from them. You know, why is my soul here? Why have I decided to incarnate onto this planet? Why did I experience so much pain and intensity for the first chapter of my life? How can I liberate myself from suffering and pain? And how can I support in liberating as many people as possible? So that was one of the big driving forces on my journey. And the other one was, I felt very called to go back to the land and to learn how to live really close to nature, to learn how to live close to, to learn how to wildcraft food, to learn how to live close to the wild animals, and to see if it's possible to fully sustain myself from living off of the land. And so I met an incredible mentor during those days who taught me how to live out in the wilderness.
I want to go into that deeper into what you're, because I think it's just so, yeah, for me, it's mind blowing, really. But I would really like to go into that, but something comes up for me. You said before, which I think is really touching, that you felt just so liberated through this, during this time when you walked, mm-hmm. and for the first time showing up as who you really are.
Yeah.
What do you think? Was it the walking? Was it the no possessions? You also told me before that you lived without money. Was it the people you got into? Like, what was mm-hmm. what was the liberation? How do you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was free to do whatever spirit guided me to do from moment to moment. Mm-hmm. I had given up everything, all of my material possessions. You know, I had nothing that was catalyzing me to have to show up in any way other than what was true for me from moment to moment. And so I, just feeling back into what was going on for me at that time, I feel like I had, on some level, I just had a spontaneous third eye opening. Like, I was able to see more clearly than I had ever seen before in my life. It was like I had an awakening, and I was able to see what was important and what wasn't important. And so layers and layers and layers of my beliefs and my behaviors and my lifestyle choices just fell away at that time. And they've never come back, you know, since then. Like, certain things, like the types of media outlets that I was interested in receiving content from, completely changed. And who I gave away my inner authority to completely, completely changed. I was listening to my soul. That was the first time in my life that I consecrated my life to the divine. Like, I was on my knees in prayer and in complete surrender. I consecrated my entire life, and every day of my life for the rest of my journey here on earth was consecrated to Great Spirit, to the divine. And so it was a matter of asking to be guided and to be shown how to listen to that guidance and how to follow it from moment to moment and day to day for the rest of my life. And how can I be a vessel? How can I be in service? How can I become as clear as possible so that I can be in alignment and be congruent and be able to serve and support in this collective awakening and collective healing that's happening. And along the way, I'd met some really extraordinary people. It was the first time in my life that I met people who I definitely feel like I've known before this lifetime. And I don't presume to say that I know how all of that works, but I've met many people during that pilgrimage and after that pilgrimage who felt that they already knew me, who immediately welcomed me in as if I was part of their family, who were crying when they first heard what I was doing and what was guiding me. And it was so touching. Someone who had been praying to be seen for who I truly am since I was a little girl, finally, for the first time in my entire life, people were seeing me for who I truly was at soul level and honoring me and being so moved. I mean, I had people say to me, with tears in their eyes, "Thank you so much for coming back. I've missed you." And I was like, wow, I've never met this person in my life. I had people saying, now I know the age of Aquarius is really here. I have so much revitalized hope, because this is such a clear sign. When people are dropping everything, dropping all of the egoic structures, this is a sign that the Aquarian age is really here. People were so moved. I had people saying, I had this woman say, "Eres una profeta." And this woman was like, "You're a prophet." It was so sweet and touching. People were like, they were really moved by the fact that I was just completely surrendered and with no money, no possessions, and following spirit's guidance from moment to moment, asking how can my life be utilized in service to humanity.
Thanks for sharing. I think the world needs to hear that. Because there weren't that many people able to actually meet you back then. So we can maybe spread some more of that so they get to meet you. Yeah, thanks for sharing. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much, love.
So let's drop into your living in the wild story, because I think that is so... Yeah, it's just mind-blowing, especially because you were, there's wild animals, like it's like from that normal everyday perception from a person like me,
yeah,
it's dangerous, but you felt safe, what you said. So yeah, share mm-hmm. more about that.
Yeah, I had this deep passion during that time of my life to spend as much time as I possibly could out alone in wilderness areas. I think it was just shedding and shedding and shedding layers and layers of conditioning and imprinting out of my system, out of my field, and allowing the grace and the elements of nature and great spirit to help me in shedding so many layers of what wasn't true. And also, one of my greatest devotions in this lifetime was reconnecting to my direct link to source, my direct connection to source, because I knew inside of my being, inside of my soul, that each one of us, and I discovered this over time, and it became more and more of a strong conviction inside of my being, that every single one of us, as our birthright, has the capacity to connect to source and to connect with the wisdom of the unified field. And we all have the same ability to connect to divine guidance and the wisdom from the unified field. And so I was determined to discover how I could reconnect to my channel to source and support other people in doing the same. So without the intermediary of a priest or a rabbi or a monk or a shaman, I knew inside of my being, even though no one had fully told me, I knew that I had access to connect to divine guidance directly without any intermediary. So that was one of the things that I wanted to do when I was out on my long retreats in the forest. And so I was passionate about spending as much time as I could out in the wilderness alone. At the time, I was often living in and around New Mexico. And I met an amazing, amazing mentor who I love so, so much. His name is Wind. And he, to this day, he lives in a debris hut in the Gila Wilderness. The Gila Wilderness is this exquisite wilderness area in New Mexico that has never been bought or sold in the history of this planet. And so the ethers there are so pure, and it's such a beautiful land. You can still see these little arrowheads and pottery shards from indigenous people that lived there like 600, 700, 800 years ago, because it's very dry there. So all these things have been preserved. It's a very magical vortex. And so I did one of my long retreats there. I had been to India, and I met this amazing, beautiful Ani, which means nun in the Tibetan Buddhist language. Her name is Tenzin Palmo. She's a woman who had done 12 years of retreat high up in the Himalayas in a cave in the snow. And I went and spoke with her. This was probably in 2008. I ended up doing a pilgrimage to India. And I met and spoke with her, and I told her that I felt called to do a long solo retreat myself. And she said to me, you know, it feels very compelling to do a retreat in the Himalayas. It feels like it's special or unique. And she said, but actually solitude is very hard to come by in India these days, even in the Himalayas. And she did tell me about one cave that I could go do a retreat in, and I went and visited it, but you could see an entire village from across the valley. You could see and you could see them, even though it was really far away. And that wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to be completely isolated. So she guided me to do my retreats in the wilderness back in North America, which is exactly what I did. She's a wonderful, very inspiring woman. I was very, very honored to sit with her in the Himalayas when I was there. And when I came back to the US, I decided to do my first retreat. I did in a mud hut in Tres Piedras, New Mexico, which belonged to my friend Wind. So I did a 20-day solo retreat, just praying and meditating. And in that retreat, I was reading about the lives of saints and sages and mystics from all different times. I was really passionate and inspired about that. And then my second 20-day solo retreat, I did deep in the Gila Wilderness. So someone from the community packed up a donkey. We took out two donkeys. One donkey had my supplies, and then the other donkey we rode. And we rode deep into the Gila Wilderness, deep, deep, deep in there, where I wouldn't see another person, hear a voice, or have any frequency of anything other than pure wild nature for 20 days. And so I stayed out there. This time I didn't bring books. I was meditating a lot, meditating for hours and hours every day, interacting with the wild animals, which Wind taught me how to do. He taught me how to be with the wild animals. I was a little scared at first, but eventually I really learned how to attune to them, tune into them, help them know that I'm safe and that I am there in peace. And I really learned how to be with the wild animals. And it became a great joy for me to be with many different wild animals when I was out in my forest retreats. And so on that retreat, like I said, I meditated so much. I was really just developing a relationship with all the different star constellations, all the different wild plants, the wild animals, and processing and listening to my guidance and just being and just sitting. And so when the 20 days were over, I packed up my backpack and I hiked out of the wilderness. So it was a long, long hike to get out. I just wanted to determine for myself when I felt like the retreat was over. And so that's why I decided to hike out. And I also wanted to be really sovereign in the whole experience. So this community member just dropped me off out there. And I dove into this inner vision quest that I had known was part of my destiny for many, many years. And I finally got to bring that to fruition and to find that way to connect to source in my own unique way, so that I could empower other people to connect to source and remind them that it is their birthright, and that, you know, we all have the ability to connect to source in the unified field.
Wow. Thanks for sharing. It's just, for me, it's just mind blowing.
Yeah, it was kind of mind blowing. And the thing is, during all of these times, I was still holding on to so much emotional pain and trauma that I didn't fully have the tools. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I was lonely on that retreat and there was emotional pain, but I was also inspired because I knew it was my destiny. I was like, oh, I'm fulfilling this important piece of my destiny right now. So it was so worth it, you know, so worth it. I would never, ever change those experiences, but I was lonely. And I didn't really know how to have deeply intimate relationships. I was to be very transparent, I was terrified of emotionally intimate relationships. So I had, you know, in those
that
years,
is so, hang on, that is so interesting, because that theme seems to pop up in my life somehow. I remember when I first started to dive into spiritual literature and I don't know, 20 years ago or something, one of the books that hit me was, I think it was Jack Kornfield, who was in the Himalayas and then came back
him.
And got right back into the everyday fight with that the woman he met, but like being so, you know, enlightened by himself in the Himalayas, like totally, you know, in all the ashrams and stuff, and then coming back to Western everyday life, connecting to a woman, and all the shit hits the fan, like right back. So it's so interesting. How can, you know, how can that be? It's like, it feels like two universes within us that we can, at the one hand, like, as you said, being so connected to source, to your inner guidance, to nature, totally grounded in that experience. And also, because you also, by that time, you had got rid of a lot of stuff. You had dropped away so much of your identity, and still this piece of deep connection to other human beings is just the hardest stuff we need to relearn, right? So how did you do it?
It is such an interesting contrast. So during those years, I had shaved my head and I was basically living like a self-directed monastic path. Like I was living for about 5 years, I was living a monastic renunciant path, you know, meditating, doing spiritual practices, qigong, chanting, yoga, all of these things, and such a pure heart of devotion. But then there was this fear and this deeper emotional healing that really needed to happen. Really looking at the fear that still was residing in my nervous system from the traumatic incidences that I had experienced of human intimacy, you know?
Yeah.
And so what I discovered later, in those times, I ended up meeting a lot of really idealistic people. And I was very passionate about being very idealistic. And, you know, I met people who were living out in the wilderness, people who would never ride in a car, people who were living totally moneyless. I lived totally moneyless for 7.5 months, actually. And I had this community of people that were teaching me about the free culture and living for free. And there's this whole underground movement of free culture, which was what sustained me at that time. It's, you can, if you're interested, you could find out about that on Google, but it's in Portland. I met all these people that were teaching me about this. And so these really idealistic people, like I said, who were so dedicated to nature that they would never ride in a car, or so dedicated to whatever it was that they would never do such and such a thing. And I kind of was really touched by that. I was like, wow, this deep idealism really spoke to me at that time. But what I discovered in that whole journey was the parts of me that were so stringently idealistic were also secretly hiding an unexamined pain inside of me that hadn't been unpacked yet. And that was where the real work began.
So How is it that they are connected? How are they connected, those two?
So what I discovered for myself, and a lot of the other beautiful beings that I met with this strong idealistic thread, is that underneath there's also some vulnerability or an unwillingness to fully engage with the world as it is, you know? So I've had my journey now.
It's like a resistance that you cling to that idealistic version, but without surrendering to what actually is.
and not being willing to fully interact with the whole rest of the world. Like the idealism allows you to isolate yourself from other people.
That is so interesting. And that is like what you're saying, that living moneyless is like this really strong community probably, but we have, I would say we have that as well. You know, people that are really idealistic about right wing or left wing, or, you know, about only organic food or vegan or eating meat or, you know, getting your vaccination or not getting that. Like, it's like, there's so many like idealisms?
Idealistic. Ideologies. Yeah.
Ideologies.
And what I discovered, you know, I've been humbled by life, you know, so many times, as we all have. And what I discovered was my own idealism allowed me to self-isolate and to not interact with certain people that might be triggering for me, and also be the greatest catalysts for my growth and evolution, my ability to truly be in service from a deeply aligned and humble place of being committed to serving in this world as it is, messiness and all.
It is, I think it's so profound. So I want to point this out, because you know how we have the tendency, or our mind has the tendency, to divide the world into good or bad. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so beautiful, your life example, as your idealism, in a way, has contributed to this huge awakening.
Yeah.
This huge letting go.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it's like this huge gift for your life, channeling, you know, connecting to the divine and to your inner source. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, preventing for some time, and then catalyzing to actually grow all these other bits and pieces and heal the rest. So it's so interesting, because one could say, okay, that's too idealistic and idealism is bad, but it's like, it's not, it's just, it serves you in so many ways, even though it has prevented things in some ways as well, but it's just so beautifully, it just opens up to me there so much. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, what I learned from that is, you know, my journey has been around continuing to open up to life and what is showing up from day to day, and continuing to allow life to humble me and polish me and invite me into even more growth and expansion in my capacity to be in service. Yes. And so what I didn't realize during several of those years, when I was so devoted to studying the healing arts and the wisdom traditions and meditation and spiritual practices, was that I was on some level of spiritual bypass. And what really was required in order for me to come into the highest level of alignment that I could, was to do the deep emotional healing work as well. So in 2017, I believe it was, I joined a healing art school, a year and a half long healing school called the Luminous Awareness Institute. And that was where I got to really feel and heal all of the unexamined fears and grief and pain and anger and rage and angst and all the different emotional pieces that had been inside of me. So, you know, this year and a half long program was a really, really great healing school. And it really changed my life. And after I completed the healing school, that was when my life started to work at the highest level that it has ever worked in my life. And I was guided, you know, a few years before that, I was guided to come back into busy urban life and actually move back to Los Angeles, but in a completely different way. And so I did. I moved back to Los Angeles, and I started studying leadership, coaching, purpose-guided entrepreneurship, and marketing in the context of how can I utilize these tools to be in service in this world. And so since 2012, I've been very deeply immersed in that world of leadership and marketing and coaching and all of these things, you know, with the intention of utilizing that to support not only my own Dharma, but also to support the sacred work of many other visionary entrepreneurial leaders as well, which is what I've been doing in my business, is supporting and guiding other people in how to navigate their business from a soul-led perspective, and how to bring more of their authentic selves into their business, and how to really attune to their highest guidance in making decisions and choices for how to bring their message and communicate their offerings and communicate who they are, what they stand for, what they're passionate about, and why they're choosing to do what they're doing. You know, communicating all of that from a very soul-aligned way.
How was that journey for you? You said you were guided, so it's probably your inner voice.
Yeah. Saying, it was okay. Really challenging. It was really challenging.
I can imagine.
Because I started spending so much time out in the forest.
Yes.
And I was living this really beautiful life of connecting with Mother Nature, it was just so nourishing for parts of myself that really needed that nourishment, connecting with Mother Nature and connecting with all these different spiritual teachers. And I didn't really have a career for those years. I mean, I was doing work trade and bartering. I was living at ashrams and intentional communities and doing work trade. And that was my livelihood, having a very, very, very simple life. And then when I received the guidance to come back into busy urban life, move back to Los Angeles, I was shocked, because I never in a million years, when I'm sitting out there in the middle of the forest, in the middle of a 20-day retreat, just praying and meditating, and I never would have thought that I would come back into Los Angeles. But that was what the guidance was. And interestingly enough, it was exactly at the time when the Mayan calendar ended, 12/21/12. That was when I was guided to come back into society. So interesting synchronicity with
12/21/12. Oh, okay, that's
remember
my
that
calendar.
Remember that big, you know, when people are like, the world is going to end in 2012. That was the exact month that I was guided to come back to Los Angeles and start. So it's a lot of really interesting synchronicities with like some of these prophecies and people saying that, you know, oh, the Aquarian age is here, which I feel so deeply that the Aquarian age is definitely here now with what's been going on in the last 18 months since the beginning of COVID. The way that I see it is that, you know, at a surface level, it's very dynamic, it's very challenging, but what's actually happening too is old systems and structures that have not been serving humanity for decades and centuries and even millennia, these old systems and structures are falling down rapidly, and that I believe is holistic and it's for the greatest good. And so what I see when I look at what's going on globally right now, when I look from a hawk's eye view, what I see is all of these old systems and structures, these old paradigm systems falling down, falling down, falling down. And then all of these new fields becoming available for us to plant the seeds that we've been holding and curating with so much devotion for so many years, knowing that in divine timing, we would get to plant those seeds. And so I believe that these are the times when we get to plant the seeds of our soul in these fertile soils, and that we are birthing a whole new way of living and being on this planet.
I totally agree. Yeah.
And so I've had such an interesting dance with it, Dana, because I have that idealistic streak in me and I love that part of me. And I also, it's important for me to be mindful when I get mindful that it's not a black and white thing. And it's not this, the path to the new earth is a middle path, you know? So I actually recently, as I shared with you privately before we started the interview, I recently had a little chapter where I took 2.5 weeks off of social media, off of Facebook and Instagram and any social media. And I watched The Social Dilemma. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but I watched The Social Dilemma. I took 2.5 weeks off and I went into a plant spirit medicine ceremony. Actually, I did a plant spirit medicine ceremony with a deep inquiry. What is serving the highest? Am I meant to deactivate my Facebook and my Instagram and just let that go so that I can, you know, perhaps there's a different path that's being called for, because there's such a massive, you know, global paradigm shift going on. And I am a kind of person who's willing to surrender everything if I'm guided to. And I was willing, you know, I've built these platforms for, you know, almost 9 years now, or well, but Facebook I've been building for a long time, and my different platforms, YouTube and all these things, I've been building very heartfully for a long time. And I was like, Spirit, would you like me to take them all down so we can, you know, is there something else that's being asked for during this paradigm shift? And, you know, I cried a lot of tears around how sometimes those platforms can really, they can really draw in people, including myself, into these comparison games and into overusing them to get connection needs met. So I cried a lot of tears around that. And I really processed and I really listened. I talked to some mentors and I got really clear that I'm not meant to deactivate those platforms, that what I'm meant to do is take a middle path, you know, a wise path, a conscious path, and that I'm meant to be a bridge. And I believe that so many of the people listening, we are meant to be bridges here. Those of us that are called onto this path of being in service, of sharing our gifts in service to co-creating a more harmonious, sustainable, just, and equitable world for everyone. Mm. You know, that we're called to be in service from a middle path, where it's not this extreme thing, but we're meant to be in the world, and we're meant to be bridges between the worlds, you know, between the earth and between source. And, you know, in my journaling, I do this practice called soul dialogue journaling, where I dialogue with my soul and I ask my soul to counsel me on things. And one of the things that my soul guided me during one of the journaling sessions was that there is actually just as much love here in this world as there is in the afterlife, that there's so much love in 7+ billion human hearts all around the planet. There's so much love just wanting to be shared and just waiting to be shared. And it's like, if you look to like all of the hearts of humanity, maybe 20 or 30% of the love is actually being circulated. But can you imagine, how can we make the world more emotionally safe, more harmonious, more loving? How can we create more of a unified field so that people can, makes me want to cry. Mm. How can we create more of a unified, safe, loving field so that people can bring forward the other 70% of all, yes, the love that's in their hearts, and we can circulate it? It would be amazing. Can you imagine, Dana? It would be the, yes, biggest party ever.
Yeah, get goosebumps.
If everyone's just liberating all of the love from inside their hearts, in this world, third dimension, in this plane of existence, we will have just as much love as there is in the afterlife. And sometimes for those of us, when we have a really hard time and we go into despair, and I want to share transparently that I've gone into despair and thought, you know, just thoughts of like, it's too heavy, I can't do it in this world, it's so dense and it hurts my heart. I've gone into those thoughts more times than I could care to count ever, you know. But what I truly believe is that we have just as much love in this world as what we have available to us in the afterlife. Sometimes we think, oh, when I go to heaven, it's just going to be so beautiful and there's going to be so much love there. But what I truly believe, and part of what I feel really inspired to share, is it's all here. It's all here. It's all here. We just, each one of us needs to do the work, or gets to do the work, let's say, to come into higher personal congruency, to come into higher alignment, to find the ways to liberate all of that beautiful love inside of our hearts, and circulate it around the world so that we can all be illuminated and uplifted by it. Mm-hmm. And we can remind each other of what is really true.
I think it's just so inspiring, the middle path. I think it's exactly that. And I totally agree from what I feel, that, yeah, it's just this, it's an awesome vision. Mm-hmm. I'm all in. I'm all in. And yeah, I'm very inspired by just that word, the middle path. It's just, I think it's exactly what we need, because it's not black and white. It's not yes or no. It's mm-hmm. always yes and no. It's just, yeah, everything. Yeah. But it's still, it's a challenge in this dualistic mind we're stuck in to cultivate. So yeah. I think like an important piece of cultivating that yes and no is actually that what you said, the healing of the wounds, especially relating to the interaction with other humans. So maybe you can speak a little bit more about what happened then, like when you said you did the work, like the jumping into studying leadership and marketing and work with all these people. But how did that path go forth? How did you manage to heal those wounds and actually connect to people and become that bright, open, authentic Prima you're today, where like your heart is just open? So how do we get there?
I would love to share. And you know, you and I are both such on this similar path of like being really authentic and transparent. This is so much something that we are really devoted to. And so I'd love to share a little glimpse into what that was like to do that, that year and a half long healing school program, Luminous Awareness Institute. What we would break out into these pods. There was about 100 people in the school. And all of those 100 people, we got to witness the vulnerable, tender, terrified parts of ourselves and each other in this container. And it's a year and a half long container. So being completely witnessed with all masks off for a year and a half. And for example, we would break out into these little pods, and that they would be like 8 or 10 people that would be witnessing you as something that was really, really deeply vulnerable and even terrifying would rise up to the surface. And it was time to just be witnessed in that with these people just holding so much love and compassion. So they'd all be standing around in the circle and you'd be in the middle. For example, I was in the middle and something would come up that was so vulnerable and so scary that it hadn't seen the light of day for like 30 or 40 years. Like that part inside had not been touched for like 30 or 40 years. And so my experience, I can remember clearly some of those moments where I was thinking to myself, a part of my consciousness was thinking to myself, there was a certain voice inside that was like, this is so excruciatingly vulnerable that I would almost rather die than be witnessed in this level of terror and vulnerability with no armor, no masks, nothing to protect me. And so by saying fuck yes to that and leaning into that and being like, okay, let's do this. And it was terrifying. And part of me knew that all those people were really safe and holding so much love, but part of me was like, how can I trust, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just scared little child parts. It was nothing bad. It was just parts that were vulnerable and didn't want to be seen in the level of how much pain that I sometimes have experienced. Like it was just really charged emotion because it hadn't been touched in decades and decades. So I said, let's lean into this. And so by just breathing and being witnessed and allowing it to unfold and then crying and processing and allowing the facilitator to coach me through the whole thing as everyone held space, this was where profound life-changing transformation happened. And I finally started to understand the depths of human nature in a way that I never had before, because I was willing to go to the depths of my emotional pain and be witnessed in that. And there was another 100 students who were willing to offer the same, you know, sacred service to me for my own awareness and my own healing. So we all just created this container for each one of us to have deep, deep healing, to understand the inner workings of our human hearts more deeply. So after that, the way that I interacted with every other person changed, because I can see into the depths of these precious, tender hearts that each one of us has. And it just liberated me a lot, because I understand, so I don't have to feel so self-conscious around my tenderness or my vulnerability, because I understand that pretty much every single human on the planet has their own version of that.
Thanks for sharing. I think it's so helpful to hear that, because on the one hand, it sounds almost, that's the way it feels as well, absurd, that just imagining me being in a circle witnessing someone, maybe you being in your story and your wounds and your pain, mm-hmm. it's probably really, really touching. That's that one bit. But on the mm-hmm. other hand, it's so absurd how this pain is contained in our emotional body and in our minds, that because in that present moment, nothing, there is no, you know, there's no, nothing that hurts. There's nothing, like in that present moment, nothing is harming you. Mm-hmm. And still we all carry all this pain in our emotional body, in our like energetic body, in our minds, and are so scared. And at the same time, it's so absurd because there's nothing there actually. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. It's like when the people are witnessing, they're like, oh my gosh, bless her beautiful heart. Yes. And they're not judging you at all.
No.
They're like, oh my gosh, you're helping me heal. And they're crying, and it's touching parts of them that haven't, you know, been touched in a long time. Yeah. So, you know, one of my great passions is like, how can we make this world a more loving and kind, emotionally safe place? And so one of the things that I've started doing is recording tons and tons of guided meditations that are really deeply heart opening and touch into those tender places inside of us. And I've just been circulating them as much as I can. You know, some people are like, oh, you should make them be a paid offering and you can charge $30 on your website. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to post them everywhere. So they're all over. My meditations are all over SoundCloud. They're over Spotify. They're on Insight Timer. They're on different apps.
Oh, great. So we got all the links and post them in the show notes so everybody can, get that from your directly from your spirit into their hearts.
I feel really passionate about sharing these loving, kind, attuned, sweet messages for other people's soul, for other souls on this planet. Yeah. You know, because I know that guided meditations have helped me so much. Yes. I listen to guided meditations almost every day. I'm like, I love them. I'm obsessed with guided meditations. And they're like transmissions from different souls that are specifically speaking directly to your heart with a sincere desire, like to help you feel safe and loved and supported. And it's like, I just love it. I subscribe to a whole bunch of different, I'm like a nerd with this. I have like every single meditation app on my phone because I just think I'm fascinated by it. I think this is food for us now. This is food, and it's medicine for our hearts and souls to be able to listen to meditations every day, and just we all get to remind each other of what is really true, because there's a lot by, you know, bringing our voices out into the world by, you know, as, you know, soul-led entrepreneurs, by doing podcast interviews, by sharing, by teaching, by doing public speaking, by recording guided meditations, by making songs, anything where we share from our soul, we're literally helping remind other souls of what is really true in a world right now where there's so many different messages, and some of them are coming from people's higher wisdom and some of them are coming from a place of confusion. So we, you know, for those of us that are soul-led entrepreneurs, part of our work is helping remind each other of what is really true in this world, so that we can, you know, support each other and, you know, create content that is really nourishing for the heart and the soul and the mind as we are, you know, as we're sharing our Dharma in the world.
So if I want to have a bite of Prema, to get a little chunk, because I bet there's thousands of people now listening that think, okay, the people that do listen in English and that are also, you know, to everybody here, go get the meditations, listen to them day in, day out. That's the one thing. But if you're actually an entrepreneur, like you're self-employed or have your own little business, Prema's your girl because she does this. Tell us about what they can actually get from you, because I think that's such a unique package as well.
Mm, thank you. Well, there's three main things that I offer. One of the main things that I do is I help soul-guided entrepreneurs with business coaching, with coaching around birthing bodies of work into the world that will really benefit their communities and their clients to create more thriving and more thriving lives and businesses. And I support people with copywriting coaching, with getting clear on their core message. I also support people with writing a compelling and magnetic origin story that helps your soulmate clients to really find you, or the people who are meant to be working with you to find you. Because I also believe that if every one of us purpose-guided entrepreneurs would share our authentic origin story from a deeply vulnerable and soulful place, I believe that in and of itself will make the world a much more beautiful place for us to share in a really sincere, authentic way our origin stories. So I support entrepreneurs in helping draw out from them, like, what are the parts of your origin story, your background? It's like origin story is another word for bio in this context. Yeah. And what are the parts of your background that people really would really like to know about, that will be nourishing for them, that will help them to understand who you are and why you do what you do, and why you are, you know, the aligned person for them to work with. So these are some of the things I do a lot with: copywriting, coaching on core messaging, and coaching on writing your origin story, all from a soul-led perspective. I also do, I offer intuitive counseling sessions. And
so that's mostly one-on-one work, right? So if I'm interested,
yeah,
I probably can. Yes. Can I book like a discovery call, like get to know you somehow?
Absolutely. Yeah. If people are interested in booking a discovery call with me, you can reach out to me on Instagram at prema.gaia, and Dana will include that in the show notes. You can reach out to me and we can hop on a call and explore how I can support you. And the other thing that I offer is I work with plant spirit medicine ceremony here in Costa Rica, where I live. So that's another thing that I'm deeply passionate about. I didn't mention in the interview, but one of the things that actually taught me how to love myself after walking on the planet for 37 years without knowing how to actually love myself, the time in my life that I had that breakthrough was actually in a plant spirit medicine ceremony. And it was one of the most profound experiences in my life, to go from not knowing how to love myself to this realization of, like, how on earth did I not know how to love myself? How could I have not known how to love myself? Because, you know, it's so second nature now, but because of the imprinting and the conditioning that I had taken on from my lineage, I didn't know how to love myself for 37 years. And so that was a very powerful, I can never thank the sacred plant spirit medicines enough for the breakthroughs that they have brought in my life.
Can you just quickly, because I guess we need to wrap up. We're like,
we've been talking for a long time.
Yes, but can you just quickly, because I guess not everybody is, knows what plant-based medicine is, just like a 2-3 sentences, like a short, what is it?
So I work with many different plant spirit medicines, including ayahuasca, peyote, psilocybin, San Pedro, many others actually, kana, and different plants that they work on different parts of the consciousness, the spirit, the body, the mind, and they all produce.
So is it smoking? Is it drinking? Is it eating?
They all of the different plants. So these are plants that indigenous people have been using in different indigenous cultures around the world for millennia as part of their way of connecting to spirit. So some of them are made into teas that you drink. Oftentimes it's a tea that you drink or powder that you ingest, and it produces an altered state of consciousness, which connects you very deeply to your soul and to higher guidance. And so that's something that has really, really changed my life, and is something that I'm deeply passionate about as well. And so here in Costa Rica, I live in the rainforest, and plant spirits are respected and honored here. So I feel so, so fortunate to be living in a place where I don't have to hide the fact that plant spirit medicine has been a really important healing aspect of my personal journey of empowerment, finding my soul purpose and stepping into sharing my Dharma in the world. So that's something that, you know, if there's anyone listening who feels the call to learn more about that, please also feel free to reach out to me again on Instagram, and we can connect about that as well.
So cool. Yeah, we'll put all of the links in the show notes so you can connect to Prima. To wrap up, I have some unfinished sentences that I would like you to intuitively just finish for me. And then one little last question before we wrap up. And okay. The sentences are not always the same. They just come out of whatever source they're coming out of. So the first thing is love is
to be found deep within the center of our beings.
The world needs
each and every one of us to do the inner work, to step into the highest level of personal alignment that we can, so that we can be in service to this powerful paradigm shift and co-creating a beautiful new earth.
Spirituality means to me?
Spirituality means to me, it's an inherent part of being alive, of existing in this world. We are all, every single person on this planet is inherently a very, very spiritual being. And I feel that it's important to remember that we're all, every single person, whether they identify as spiritual or not, everyone on this planet is inherently a spiritual being. We're all so connected to Great Spirit, the Great Spirit of all of life and the unified field and source. We are all so, so, so interconnected, and we are a lot more similar than I think we sometimes realize.
I
feel most alive when I'm dancing wildly and ecstatically and rolling around on the ground like a wild mammal.
That is so good. Thank you for sharing. Okay, so my last question is, if you would be willing to share something, because I feel that we as humans tend to miss the very, very special but ordinary moments in everyday life. Mm-hmm. That string this inner chord of aliveness or ease or love or enjoyment or pleasure. I would love you to share one of those very ordinary moments. I don't know if it was singing in the shower or, you know, whatever it is, like one moment in the past week that just pops into your mind where you felt alive and connected.
Yes. Well, living here in Costa Rica, I recently moved from living in this amazing jungle cottage in the middle of nowhere by myself. And I was guided to move into this beautiful, like gorgeous community home so that I could be closer to the community. And so now I live in this amazing community home with a couple, and they're, one of the women has a little daughter, she's 7. And I love reading her bedtime stories almost every night. And she proudly calls me Auntie Prema all the time. And she introduces me to her little girlfriends as, "That's my auntie. She reads to me every night." And it's the best thing ever. It's so sweet. It just makes me so happy. Just like sitting there with her with the little books. The books are so touching. And every time I overhear her being like, "That's my auntie," I'm like, "Oh, auntie." Yeah. It makes me so happy.
It makes my heart sing. Thank you so much for sharing. I feel totally connected to her already. So
she's
cute.
Magical.
Oh, that's so nice. Prema, thank you for sharing your amazing story. Thank you for your time and your generosity and your transparency. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Dana, and thank you to everyone listening. Please do keep in touch on Instagram, and sending so much love and many blessings from the jungle to all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, ich hoffe sehr, dass du genauso beeindruckt und inspiriert bist von dieser Geschichte. Ich finde, es ist einfach unglaublich, sich vorzustellen, alles, wirklich alles loszulassen, um sich auf eine Heilungsreise zu begeben. Ich bin weit davon entfernt, obwohl ich sehr gerne wegschmeiße, aber ja, finde den Gedanken spannend, mich damit auseinanderzusetzen, auch wo hafte ich an, wo belastet mich eigentlich auch das, wo ich dran festhalte, und was können wir tun, vielleicht um mehr loszulassen, um mehr wir selbst zu sein. Wir verlinken natürlich alle Infos zu Prema's Accounts, zu den Meditationen, alles in den Shownotes, da findest du das alles. Und ansonsten hoffe ich einfach, es geht dir wunderbar, du genießt die Zeit. Wir haben schön Halloween gefeiert und ich finde es gerade so schön. Wir sind ja mit Menschlichkeit 2.0 gestartet. Es ist einfach eine große Freude, in diesen transformativen Prozessen zu sein, in denen, glaube ich, viele von uns gerade drinstehen. In diesem Sinne wünsche ich dir alles Liebe, für dich am Abend, dicken Kuss, bis nächste Woche.